Ladies and gentlemen, it is a real pleasure for me to welcome to this Lear Report David O'Hagan. He's coming to us from the UK. I'm in the Netherlands, he's in the UK. And our brave audio engineer, he got up at 5 a.m. for you, David. Oh, that was, okay. Well, it was, this interview was very important. So I've promised him a whistle.
Ah, that's a fair deal.
Yeah, okay.
That's a fair deal.
So we'll get to that later on. But I have been trying to get the Salieri Report audience to read David's articles at your website. Give the URL, David.
It's option3.co.uk.
Okay. There are three articles there. The first is Battle for Humanity. The second is the COVID-19 injection. And the third is...
It's the biological control circuit.
Right.
It's
biological control circuit.
That will do.
And these are three of the best articles to help you understand what is going on currently in the world of what I describe as creepy technology. So you make creepy technology understandable for the everyday listener. But before we dive into the articles, I want you to start by telling us a little bit about your background. You're an engineer by training, and you have a profession doing audio engineering, and then you are also a whistle maker. Is that correct?
Recent venture, yeah.
So we have it on inside information from Sophia Smallstorm that your whistles are amazing. And Sophia has a very, I would describe her as having, you know, everything has to be Six Sigma with her. So if she says they're amazing, they're really amazing. And I'm going to, after we finish the show, I'm going to talk with you more about it, because in fact, I need to order some whistles. But, and so I need a little advice from you on whistles. But tell us about you, your background, and how you came to decide to deep dive what's going on with the COVID-19 and the injections.
Okay, so I guess the way I came to this is actually through technology. From when I was very, very young, I just love technology. My father was an architect, and so from the age of two years old, he would take me to big recording studios, and I'd be there when they were building them and finished, and I was completely, I don't know, I wouldn't say obsessed, but I just loved the technology. So I used to play making recording studios, and I think my second word was Phipps Tintander, which is Phillips screwdriver. And people used to bring me electrical equipment, and I used to take it apart, and then I would collect all the components, and then when I was a little bit older, I'd make little just basic circuits, lights and motors, and I would take things apart and make the motors work. And
so you're what we call a maker, right?
Yeah. So yeah, and we had lucky enough to have a cellar full of old bits of wood, and so I was always making things from an early age. So yeah, I don't know, must have been up until the age of 7 or 8, I had piles of cables I collected, and bags of electrical components and things, and then I kind of moved away from that when I was at school, but then when I was a little bit older, I got into DJing, so I was very much into music, and then I left school when I was 16, and I did a 1-year sound engineering course, got a job, kind of with friend of my dad in. It's one of the biggest studios in Sheffield. I worked my way up making tea and coffee, and then...
it's amazing how we all start that way.
Yeah, and especially in the music industry, it's still how it's done, really. So that developed into doing more engineering, and then I got a job in another studio a couple of years later, and worked there, and then became as working freelance engineer for quite a few years.
So you're an audio engineer. Your day job is audio engineering.
It was back then, some music production. But the reason I kind of got into it is because I wanted to do my own music.
Mm-hmm.
But it very quickly became my job, and I wasn't doing my music. I was building a home studio at the same time, and it's sometimes when things become a job, you lose some of the passion for them.
Yeah.
So I decided that I needed to find another way of making a living. And started thinking about instrument making, and so I learned how to make metal gongs from an amazing German guy, and I learned how to sing, and I sort of realized I needed to, because electronic music's it's great, but
right.
It doesn't have the human element in it. It can be a bit one-sided. So I started exploring that, and I kind of rebuild the studio equipment to make it sound better with special components and changing the capacitors, the op amps, and everything. So technology was sort of my way into understanding actually working with electronics. And then it was about 2006-7, I think, I went to work in Switzerland for a year at a place called Anthrotech, who they were working on etheric resonance technology.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul Emerson, who founded Anthrotech, he died a few years ago, was just the most incredible. I mean, I'd say he's still probably the world authority on computer systems and the what they really are and where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I just learned an incredible amount about the sort of deeper aspects of technology and really what stands behind it.
Right.
And so, I mean, I was kind of.
Did you learn a lot about the nature of resonation?
To a certain extent. I mean, I was only there for a year, and they're quite secretive about. So they showed me a certain amount, but I didn't see everything. So.
Right.
But yeah, so. Yeah, from before then, I was already into the sort of what the alternative media covers now. So it's 9/11 and all those things. You know,
right.
Already going down there before then, and I guess since Anthrotech, I've really carried on going very studying. A lot of Steiner's work in relation to technology, and just really trying to understand what it is, and I found with what Steiner gave us, like a lot of subjects, you can really start to understand, not just like everyone knows there's something wrong with the way we're being pushed onto the internet at the moment, but why that is a much more
deeper question. We have a wonderful series called Future Science, and there's one called Wave Genome that you have to I'll send you the link when
we're
done.
Please.
But it's I think it would be very, some of the future science, well, all of the future science series would be very useful for you.
Yeah,
so
I've only been a subscriber for a few months, so I've got plenty to
It's a buffet. You can take what you want, leave the rest. Yeah. So then you, when did you pick up making whistles? When did you learn how to make the whistles?
Oh, is it, it was oh, it must be three and a bit years ago. A family friend who he was actually the second person ever to make the low whistle. And he was wanting to retire, and he also has some health issues. And yeah, he couldn't find anyone to take over the business. And as it happened, me and some friends, we'd built like a rehearsal room studio complex. And I'd actually, part of that was we built an instrument making workshop, which was to make the metal instruments. But then the whistle opportunity came along, so it became
Wait a minute.
the whistle workshop.
This I'll tell you who this reminds me Life is this is life is pretty simple. You do some stuff, most fail, some works. You do more of what works. If it works big, others quickly copy it. Then you do something else. The trick is the doing something else. Do you know who said that?
No.
Leonardo da Vinci.
Oh, wow. Yeah, life often has a slightly different path to what we planned, I think.
Yeah, but I think the trick is to keep doing new stuff,
Yeah.
and then you add and it grows and it grows. So, okay, so I told you I was sitting very early on. I quickly came to the conclusion that the point of the pandemic was to get everybody to take an injection, and the point of the injection was to download an operating system in our body. I mean, that to me was so clear.
Yeah.
And but I never deep dove into the details of the technology. And so of course I got called out and we had a battle royale, and I was sitting thinking, I really need to deep dive the technology. We have a database at Slayer called the Creepy Technology Database, where we've just been collecting all the creepy technology. And I said, I really need to deep dive this. And I'm a person who almost flunked biology in high school. So I'm thinking, I really don't want to do this. And right then comes an email from you saying, you're right about the operating system. See this. And I went to your website and I went, oh my God. It was like manna from heaven. Somebody's gone in and figured it all out. So tell me, the first article you wrote, there are three. The first is Battle for Humanity, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us how this happened. And I'm just going to say this again and again throughout this interview. Go read Battle for Humanity. I'm not going to make David walk you through it. These are three must read. You cannot understand your world without reading these three articles. They're absolutely magnificent. Anyway, I'm interrupting my own question. Battle for Humanity. How did you decide to do this?
Well, it's I think middle of 2019 before all the madness started. So I this back wall I started doing that because I felt I should start talking about technology in relation to the internet specifically. So I was already kind of putting information together for a presentation. So I kind of got an outline before Christmas 2019, and yeah, I was just planning on just
When did when what date exactly did you start?
I couldn't say. It was, I think, mid 2019.
Because the G7 plan for crypto was approved in June, and then the going direct reset was approved in August 22nd, 2019. So it's remarkable.
It's somewhere right. Yeah, I wish I could remember exactly, but
So all I can discern is that you perceived a tremor in the force.
yeah. No, yeah, I had no idea what was coming, but yeah, so I had already started getting some information together, and then yeah, March last year happened, and within, I don't know, 2 3 weeks, it became, well, to me anyway, it became very obvious that something major was happening. And and very quickly after that, it was almost like the I guess who would you call Mr. Global showed his hand, and right. it was this flood of information from you know, mainstream media and you know, the science magazines, and it was almost just like
a deluge of access to information.
And it was I've been trying to talk to people for years about the consequence of people creating a persona online and
right.
trying to explain the spiritually what that might be doing. But it's such a hard thing to talk to people about. They just don't really get it.
Right.
But suddenly there was all this information coming out that I guess gave people the ability to kind of explain what's happening with evidence, not just theory. And so, yeah, I guess I was a little bit upset with what was happening as well.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, I was from day one, I was saying the economy, it's the consequences of, you can't close the world down. And so I was like, okay, right, that's it.
Right.
And then I just started writing.
But your pieces don't reflect, you know, a lot of times when people write about these things, they bring a lot of psychic garbage because they're so upset.
Mm.
But yours are very peacefully presented, I would say, given what's really happening.
Yeah.
And that makes it much easier to understand what's really happening.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, I guess I felt the most powerful thing is understanding what's happening, because the only reason I think it's happening to this extent and it's just lack of knowledge. You know, it's easy to get upset with people, but they just, no one's got a clue what's happening.
Well, it's a lot of this technology has been developed in relative secrecy or real secrecy.
Mm.
And, you know, people can't fathom. It's interesting. Sophia Smallstorm, who I know you know, has a wonderful back newsletters that we're going to publish this week or next about how the Comanches lost to the new settlers and the cavalry because, not because they couldn't deal with the technology, but they couldn't fathom existed. So you can't defeat something if you can't fathom it exists. And that's, to me, the challenge. Many people can't fathom that other people don't have empathy, or, you know, look at them the way they would look at a separate species, and they can't, and then they just don't understand. You know, it's interesting because I grew up with a Christian church and all the Christians talking about Mark of the Beast. But it turns out if you make the Mark of the Beast small enough and they can't see it with a visible eye, they can't fathom that it's that thing they've been anticipating their whole life. So, so tell us a little bit, what did you learn by doing Battle of Humanity, and what was your essential message?
I think it was that we all have to make a choice now, and the internet and the what they're now calling starting to call the metaverse, which is the next version of the internet, it's not something we can take a middle ground with. And I think in the near future, we probably won't even be able to enter that realm of existence without some kind of augmentation. which means, you know, up until now, you know, I mean, the internet, it's done a lot of damage to society, but it's also allowed an explosion of information. So I see it as like a, as a small window where it can bring us to the point of understanding, but it's I don't think we're going to be able to continue completely in that system and remain free human beings. I think it's we're very quickly reaching a point where we're all going to have to choose. Either we merge ourselves biologically with this technology, or we say no and create an alternative.
Right.
And I think the challenge when I speak to people is it's not they don't have enough information to make a proper conscious choice about it.
Right.
It's and without and to really understand it, I feel you have to understand the whole purpose of Earth evolution and what's the purpose of existing, what's the person purpose of being, because without this bigger picture, it you know what well what's wrong with going to the cinema in the virtual world, or you know going on a virtual holiday.
Right. So ultimately, these are spiritual, these are deep spiritual and ethical questions. And they can't, they can't be. To me, you have to see them in the context of, what is it people call the long arc of history? And I think one of the reasons Steiner is very useful is he gets you to think in 1,000-year increments. Yeah. So, of course, my favorite is your second article. I loved Battle for Humanity, but I really love the COVID-19 injection. So, how long, when did you finish Battle for Humanity?
Well, it keeps going on, to be honest.
That's true. Every time I check in, there's more.
I mean the main bulk of the article was you know done September last year. I mean it was actually on the internet quite early on, but
Right.
the kind of bare bones was there, and it just sort of filled out. And yeah, the last I don't know last 4 months, I mean it's not changed a lot. It's just when there's little nuggets of evidence or information that arrive, then I just put them in. So
So COVID-19 walks us through the what is an mRNA, they call it vaccine, I'll call it injection. And it tries to help us understand what it is using the manufacturer's words as well as other technologists' words. So you're really deep diving their material. So how much time did you spend reading through? Did you focus on Moderna? Or were you looking at all of them?
Yeah, I mean, may I may I mean I mainly looked at Moderna, I guess. And there's some really great papers about smart vaccines, and
They call them smart vaccines.
I mean
Whoa.
this is from a few years ago. I mean it was 2015. And it's a whole area of science. This is biocomputing, and
Right.
it seems like they're kind of building software programs where you can put in what you want to achieve, and then it will somehow convert this. It will create code which will then run on these kind of gene sequences, and
Right.
so I mean, I'm not, I'm not a microbiologist, I'm not an expert on this at all, but so you can actually, I guess you somehow print in some way these strings of data, which then program the cell to do whatever you want it to do,
Right.
and they're working towards making the cells function as computer processes.
So I'm a great believer. For many years, I was an investment banker, and then I got in a food fight with the US federal government, and that caused me to kind of get spat out of the establishment. And then I went through a process of dealing with lots of first reporters and then families and individuals on money issues. And what I discovered was that one of the reasons nobody understood financial or money issues, because it had been complexified to a fare-thee-well. And the average person felt that they just couldn't possibly understand it. And what I discovered is, if you don't understand it, then you are probably being defrauded. So you just need to. So I'm a great believer. You and I, anyone can understand anything if it's properly communicated. Okay. And I absolutely believe that any person who contemplates either injecting this stuff into their body, they certainly have a right to understand it and what it means and what it could do, pros and cons. But they have a right to be able to understand it in less than 1,000 hours. Do you know what I mean? And so I feel absolutely comfortable speaking about all of this, even though I'm not a microbiologist. I don't think I should have to be a microbiologist to discuss things that governments and businesses are trying to force us to put in our veins. Okay. So the hubris of what they're up to, like, I'm too stupid to understand, excuse me. I don't buy that. So the first thing I want everybody listening to this to do, I want you to feel absolutely empowered to be as stupid as you want in asking questions and getting to understand this. Because if somebody can't explain it to you in 10 minutes, it's their problem, not yours. So, and I don't think there's a health officer in America who can explain, and maybe even Europe who can explain to you what's in this and what it's going to do. That's my prejudice. But anyway, so please feel free to say that you don't know because. I find it absurd that we're in a situation where global governments and businesses are trying to inject something into our bodies that somehow we can't understand. Yeah.
That is the crux of it, isn't it? It's yeah.
Okay. So basically what this is, so let's focus on Moderna for now, because that we have different injections and sort of different variations. But this is something that changes our genes.
I mean, it's difficult because the official line with the mRNA vaccines is that they don't change our genes permanently. It's like a little bit of software that goes in there, and it programs a cell to produce a spike protein, and then it disappears, and that's it. But there's if you listen to a lot of interviews with top microbiologists and people in this field, they don't seem to really even know if it's going to be permanent or not. And I've not fa I mean I've not found any interviews that where it's really clear from both sides of the argument.
Right.
And I mean, what one of the interviews from one of the guys at Moderna, he's he was talking about using it as repairing people who have a some kind of genetic rare genetic disease. So if it's not permanent, then how does it repair that genetic defect? So it's I don't think they're being particularly honest with this technology. And you know, I'm always careful. You know, I've got my opinions, but I think when you can argue this within their what they present as the truth. And I mean, for example, the DNA vaccines, that you know, Moderna, I think there's a quote on there that Moderna says that once in the cell they can change the DNA. So they're saying it doesn't change the DNA, but it can do. So I mean I personally I don't see how, you know, this is the same technology used to create genetically modified you know, plants or animals. It's the same, it's the same sphere of science. So I think it could even be a case of a kind of almost an ignorance on the people that make this technology, where they think they're more clever than they are almost.
Well, I doubt they have the full concept of how it's going to be used.
No.
So if you look at how these things are developed, usually you have different lines that intersect. You know, you have telecommunications, you have pharma, you have tech, you have social media, you've got the military, you've got all these different lines, and everybody's on a need-to-know basis. And so they don't begin to see how the system might work. Now, the part of the challenge here is this is a giant experiment. So these injections have not been approved by the normal process. They're being rolled out under an emergency authorization. So as a legal matter, they're an experiment. We're participating in a vaccination experiment. And no one know, I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen. So for example, the scientists I trust say most of the adverse events will start to appear 6 to 18 months after the injections, which is astonishing, because if you look, you know, if you look at the adverse events that are happening already, you know, so, but at the same time, I have to say, you know, the universe is full of grace. So I'm hoping some of that grace will help protect people. But I don't think we can know for a while what these things are going to do to people. And the problem is, by the time we learn, it may be too late.
And I mean my feeling is very much that this is not necessarily it, that this is the first of
Many.
a slow process of changing the natural human being. And you know, with each injection, I think it could slowly cut us off more and more from the higher parts of ourselves. And you know, it's easy to be very black and white. You take the injection and that's it. But I think the human being is much more, is very resilient. I mean, the fact we're still
Well, I bumped into the whole vaccination issue through investment advisory, and finding that a lot of my clients had finances that were severely damaged by the vaccine injury and the physical injury to one or more children. So that's how I kind of bumped into it. But what I saw, then I tried to study and understand what was happening and why was it happening. But what I saw was a century of neurological damage. Serious neurological damage. And what was amazing is how many people are functioning with slight neurological damage from, you know, sticking heavy metals into our brains for decades and decades and decades. And we've all been adapting and living with it, but this is another giant step up. And you know, when I first realized that several people in the process were experts in brain machine interface, I said, oh, this is not good. But we're, you know, if you watch the adverse events that are happening, you know, this is serious neurological damage. Serious. Now, the reports I'm getting from all around our network of people they know who have been taking the injections is they report people who really fit Steiner's description of vaccinations that cut us off from our higher self, that cause us to lose our soul, on. I also get reports, and this fits with neurological damage, of people whose minds can't stop racing.
After they've had the vaccine. Wow.
So we built a family financial disclosure form.
Yeah, it's very good.
And we've translated it into German and French, so it's available in three languages. And the goal was to really get, the family members you're trying to talk other family members out of taking it to go through the due diligence process of really understanding what this is. And of course, they're all encouraged to read the COVID-19 injection. So I have this image of you deep diving Moderna's website and marketing material and just having these, oh God, moments. So tell us about some of the best moments when you were deep diving the research. Because
Okay.
if I were you, I would have been stunned that they were that obvious.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, the fact that they call it an operating system is, I mean, it's, I mean, I think that's what suddenly happened is they are actually saying what they're doing, but people, they think it's metaphor, or it's just, I don't know, it's very strange because they're saying it, and then you try and tell people, and they don't seem to understand. They can't even believe that that's possible.
Well, I think it's because the technology is so tiny. It's invisible.
I mean, it's a slight side point, but I don't know if you know, but computer processors, CPUs, that they haven't really been designed by human beings since the middle of the 90s, and I think yeah, from the early 90s, I believe. So people used
When
to
you say they
design
haven't been designed by human beings, what do you mean?
that there is there, but they used to be people used to design a CPU on paper, and they would have to hold they'd have to hold the circuit in their head. And then they would shrink it down and make a processor, but it very quickly got to the point where no one's intellect was could hold the
The full
circuit in
design.
the circuit in their head. So you what they had to do is they used computer program software to design the CPUs. And that's been going on. Yes, so that's been going on probably.
So basically, what you're saying, would you describe it as AI designing the circuits and humans not completely understanding them?
Yeah, I mean, back then it wasn't even. Yeah, I guess computers are basic AI. So yeah, and this has got to a point now where literally no one understands really how a computer works. That they understand the building blocks and they put the parameters in these software programs, but no one can actually.
Take it apart and put it back together again.
No, I mean this it's I mean just billions of transistors in these things, and it's like the whole internet and computer technology is completely beyond anyone's understanding, and it has been for a long time. And with the as the quantum computers come online and the AI really starts
Kicking in.
take kicking in, I mean it's going to be AI designing all this stuff, and it's going to even the best computer scientists will have no clue of really how it works. So yeah, just in relation, and then back to the vaccines, well, injections. It's the technology's so far even the official technology is so far advanced of what anyone really thinks it is. I mean,
Right.
I'm surprised when I find this stuff. I'm just like, it's like I
You
need
know,
to do
there's
I,
people who absolutely believe that, and Sophia's described this to me, that using this technology, they can basically turn us all into Bitcoin miners or producing energy or, you know, basically while we're walking around, they can use our cells as CPUs to help process whatever.
yeah, I think it's going to get really crazy. And I mean, there's that quote on the COVID-19 injection from Elon Musk, where he says, you know, you can do anything with mRNA. You can turn someone into a butterfly.
Right.
I mean, it's
One of the things that most concerns me, which I don't understand, is the, you know, once they get what Moderna calls the operating system in your body and the plug and play app, I couldn't believe they used the word. The guy said, this is information therapy. Wow. Okay. So once they get all that in there, how will that connect and communicate with cellular technology?
So
And
yeah, I've thought a lot about this because,
yeah.
again, I think this technology is more advanced. You know what the DARPA have on their table at the moment. You know, I think it's much more advanced than what Moderna are using. And there's a question of, is there anything more advanced in there than what they're telling us,
Right.
than there's officially there. That's I think that's the big question, because I mean what one little idea I had was, I mean, you could program the cell to produce a certain protein or whatever in a rhythmical fashion.
So you can
Just
toggle back and forth between 0 and 1, right?
yeah,
Yeah.
and you could and that could produce a slight little, you know, chemical, and that could be like a tracking device. I mean,
Right.
that was one thing I was thinking about. So it's the way I'm seeing it is, you've got the sort of two parts converging now. So, and on the article, there's an example of they congestionally engineer change a mouse for their neurons to become light sensitive,
Right.
and then they can pulse light at the skull of the mouse and manipulate its brain activity, its behavior. So through a combination of external hardware, like your Apple Watch, and or you know,
Right.
by subtly altering the actual genetics of someone, I think they can start communicating with each other. And yeah, I mean, the light things, that's a few years old. Yeah, how many other ideas have we
Right.
got? And
I spent a lot of time in the 90s, the DOD and the Department of Justice entered into a memorandum of understanding to prototype non-lethal weapons domestically. And the DOD had spent, you know, decades building all these invisible sort of what they call non-lethal weapons. And what I discovered was a whole world of people, some of which are called the targeted individuals, who were dealing with electronic abuse.
yeah.
And what I came to conclude was that this was all prototypes. You know, they were testing and trying things, building up to sort of mass mind control. You know, you'd have people who would have thoughts injected into their brain and they couldn't figure out where they're coming through or they're being influenced. And we do a lot on the Solari Report about entrainment technology and subliminal programming. And of course, sound is very important in all of this, so you know sound. But I just became convinced they were looking into something much wider. Now, if you look at this technology, it looks to me like it's part of an effort, you know, to do surveillance, part of an effort to influence people's behavior, But also do the kind of ID and connection you need to do a financial transaction system that allows you to end currency. It's a complete control system. And if you add it to what they're doing with the social credit system in China, I mean, they're basically trying to install a social credit system here in the Western world, and do it in a more subtle way, but it's the same thing. And this will really give them the ability to institute a financial system, which is a complete control system. I mean, they'll be able to institute spatial control and transaction control that gives them complete control. And this has to be a part of it.
I think, yeah, absolutely central to the if you can, I mean, the way I see money is as an energy transfer.
Right.
So it's what you know it's a thing that facilitates all human interaction. So if you can control that at the almost make people part of that system, and then as you say, move beyond it being a currency into this tokenized
Right.
exchange system,
Right.
then it you're literally controlling people's life force, like that every
Right.
single thought action is controlled. It's yeah, I mean,
Well,
it's incredible.
the current harvesting that's going on financially can go to a whole new quantum level of harvesting. It's pretty frightening. Okay, so let's skip to the third article. Tell us about did you now you wrote that one after the Battle for Humanity? I
Which
mean after COVID-19 injection?
the biological control circuit one.
Right.
That was actually the second one.
Ah,
No,
okay.
in fact, that was actually the first one.
Really?
Yeah, so I'd started writing the Battle for Humanity, and it was quite far along, but I hadn't put it on the website yet. And I kind of pulled bits out of there and then added a few bits, and so that was actually the first article that came up.
Okay. And that's when you were exploring, including the history of sort of controlling people with databases. So you got into the whole IBM issue. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's fascinating.
Yeah. When I discovered that IBM was doing the software for the smart meters and the smart grid in the United States, I said, oh, this is not good. No, this is not good.
Yeah, IBM, they're a very interesting company, and yeah,
Well, if you
they're
look at the pandemic, essentially one way to look at it is as a giant smart grid installation process. From the
yeah.
satellites to the smart meters to the cables into the community, into injecting whatever's being injected into, the human beings. It's all just a smart grid installation. And that's why if you look at the operability standards of this passport they're trying to promote, the vaccine passport. It's just a bank card system and it requires you to certify that you've had the bank card system installed into you. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah.
So there's something really special about your work that I really want to communicate to everybody who's listening, and that is you seem to have, and this is one of the reasons I want you to watch Wave Genome, you seem to have a much more, a much greater understanding, both spiritually and intellectually, of all the energetic and spiritual issues here. And all of the dialogue about this technology is often missing that background that you seem to have. So, I almost don't have words to communicate it, but you have a very clear intelligent picture of what sovereignty means to an individual. What is indi So when I talk about we are sovereign individuals under a divine authority, you just seem to have a profound, natural, intuitive understanding of what that all means. And so when you write about technology, you're writing from somebody who understands what could be lost here. And that's what makes your work to me so, it's just like watching, it's like watching Hank Aaron hit a home run. It's like an ace.
Oh, thanks.
And so now I know that when you have that kind of appreciation, looking into this technology and writing about this is so hard to do, let alone write it in a peaceful manner. But you've managed to bring that to it. You've managed to bring that perspective. And so, any thoughts on that?
Oh. Well, I guess it helps if you love technology. I know,
Yeah, it does.
and I still love technology. But I think it has its place, and it's v
So let's pretend we had a governance structure that was really of high integrity and, sort of, Mr. Global 2.0
Yeah.
said to you, okay, David, how could we use technology to lift us up and support us as individuals who are sovereign with under divine authority? How could we use technology to be great? What would you suggest? What would your principles, your operating principles?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's probably slightly controversial, but I would say that binary digital-based technology isn't that technology. It's we have this idea that technology is neutral and it's what we do with it that counts.
Right.
And if you really go deep into Steiner's work, you realize that there isn't anything that is neutral in existence.
Right.
So he what he says is beyond the what we call the physical, everything is beings, or you could say dynamic conscious action potentials. So, and the everything is has a quality to it, and it's the interaction of these qualities that result in everything we see in the physical, and that in ourselves we're constantly in the middle of these sort of flow of conscious sort of a dynamic of different consciousnesses, and the binary technology itself is, and if anyone wants to really understand it, Paul Emerson's books are just incredible.
What's it
So,
called?
Paul Emerson,
Do you know the name of the book?
yeah, from Gandhi Chapeau to Silicon Valley, and there's three books now, book one, two, and three. Book three is not translated to English yet, but the first two are plenty to be going on with.
Okay.
But you won't find them on the internet.
Really? How do you get them?
There's I can I'll put something on one of the pages on my website. There's you can phone up, fax them, they'll and put an order in. But he didn't want them to be on the internet, so.
He didn't want to sell them?
No, he did want to sell them, but he didn't want them to be on like Amazon, and he wanted them to be sold through like bookshops, or you can order them directly from they have a printing company as well.
Okay, so you'll put up a link.
Yeah, I'll put this. I think there's three there's three places, one for Europe, one for America, and I'll have to think where I put it. There's a diagrams page on the website. I'll put it at the bottom of there, just the contact details.
Okay.
So yeah, he explains. So the again we get it's I find with all these things, it's you start trying to explain it and then you hit this brick wall of you have to go to the bigger picture again.
Yeah.
And then I'm always aware that that can put a lot of people off. And then so it's how do you try and explain the bigger picture without people just writing it off? So yeah, within I mean I can so that you can see these there the diagrams page on the website, you can look at these in more detail. So what Steiner brought, and I've been lucky enough to spend quite a lot of time with people who followed Steiner's path that he outlines in How to Know Higher Worlds, and they have developed similar abilities to Steiner, not as high, but and they've confirmed that what he said is absolutely accurate. So it's not what's unique about well, not unique, but I think anyone who has access to real high knowledge finds the same thing. But with Steiner, he gave this kind of map of reality, and we have many people that have confirmed what he said, and it's highly accurate, and they see the same things. So, and especially with anything to do with these kind of higher questions, the potential for error is far greater than, you know, when you do any research, you can come to the wrong conclusion. But with this knowledge, you have to be far, far more careful. So that's I'm very careful sort of the sources that I use, and it's generally Steiner primarily, and then people I've known personally who have they do what they call spiritual research, and so they can, yeah, you know, they look at anything that they choose to, and it's not like suddenly you develop these abilities and you know everything. Not at all. It's these are literal. So if you look on here, this is the physical realm here, and then we have all these levels going down and above, and each one of these is like a whole world. So, you know, someone who's gone to Africa doesn't know a thing about Africa. It's literally a science where you have to. There's these interactions of these beings or conscious action potentials or whatever you
One
want
of the things that so concerns me when I watch some of the videos you pull together from Moderna or Microsoft, what you realize is these folks are hyper-materialists
Yeah.
and they're playing around with all these different worlds they don't even know exists.
No, that's it. They don't know what they're doing. They really don't, and I think a lot of
But
them
they don't know they don't know.
no, and they, I think they genuinely believe they're doing good for the world. Very few people, you know, we get into dark territory, but very few people do anything that they believe is purposefully, you know,
Well,
bad for the
unfortunately, in
world.
my experience, a lot of people believe if it makes me money, it's good.
But yeah, in a yeah, people have all kind of
Okay,
convincing
so
themselves.
I'm listening to this, and one thing I've discovered is I have to read these three articles. But also, the question is, how do I follow your work? How do I get to know more? How do I support you? If people want to engage, what do? They come to your website? Can they email you? Can they?
Yeah, by all means, email me.
Is there contact information on the site?
Yeah, there's a contact email. Yeah, I've not got any further along with things with that. It's all quite a new, I only built the website after I started writing the articles, so.
Now, are you planning on writing another one, or are you just going to continue writing COVID-19 injection?
I think that they're maybe a little bit, but I think, yeah, maybe another one. I've started getting some. There's one thing I talk about in the Battle for Humanity is the eighth sphere, which I think's really the heart of understanding everything that's happening at the moment. But again,
Really?
we get, yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. But again, we get into these bigger questions, and
Would
so,
you be willing to write about those bigger questions? Yeah.
in the Battle for Humanity, it does cover, it covers
Well,
them as.
I think one of the reasons Battle for Humanity is one of the best pieces written on COVID, the whole event so far, is because you do bring that in.
Yeah.
And you can't possibly understand this unless you bring that in.
No, so yeah, I try to not go too deep with it because I think even as it is, it's a lot for people. And there's levels to this which we do need to start talking about because the consequences of connecting our consciousness to the internet, I think, is far, far, much far further reaching and serious than
I think
we
it's one of the
realize.
worst ideas I've seen yet in my life. Okay, well, David, I can't thank you enough for joining us. I can't thank you enough for the articles. If there's anything we can ever do to help or support you or publicize your work, just let me know. I'm only an email away. And I'm going to ask you one more time to tell everybody your website.
Okay,
URL.
so it's option3.co.uk.
Okay. And we'll have it linked at the bottom here. And so go read the articles, discover David's work. I'm going to thank you for joining me in the Slayer Report, but you're not allowed to hang up because we need to talk whistles.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, David, thank you for joining me on the Slayer Report.
Thank you, thank you.